Before we get into today's episode, I just wanted to share some good news. I'm sure many of you have heard, but Elsie Booktook First Nations was chosen as the winner of the Craft Hockeyville Challenge. They'll be receiving money to build a new arena to replace the one that had been damaged by a fire. Thanks to every one of our listeners who took the time to vote in the contest. Also, just as a quick reminder, if you need some extra content of our podcast, you can find us on Patreon. Just search for Crime and Mystery Canada. Hi, my name is Danielle, and you're listening to Crime and Mystery Canada. On this podcast, we discuss subjects that might be creepy to some, and sometimes even frightening. Some of our episodes will deal with serious subject matter, while others will be more lighthearted. Please keep in mind that I am not an expert on any of the topics I cover, just an interested party, and as always, listener discretion is advised. Hi everyone and welcome back. I'm Danielle.
I'm Paul-Emile.
And you're listening to Crime and Mystery Canada. On this week's episode, we'll be discussing two separate cases. We'll be discussing the murder of Monique Gravel and the murder of Florence Keeble. Monique was a 49-year-old nurse who also worked as a college professor. She was living in Montreal. On the evening of Sunday, April 25th, 2004, she was home alone. Monique had separated from her partner, with whom she had two children. They were teenagers, so it was a girl and a boy aged 15 and 13. According to TVANouvelle.ca, that weekend, the children were visiting with their father, and that was customary since their parents had separated.
The kids spent every weekend with their father?
According to the article I was looking at, yeah, they were with their father on the weekends. When they came home that Sunday evening, they came home to a quiet house. The police would later say that there were no signs of a break-in or forced entry. Because of this, it's hard to say if the children had any premonition that something was wrong. There really aren't a lot of details surrounding Monique's death, but the children did find her dead in the bedroom.
Okay, so if I understand, the father drops the children off, does not go in. He sends the kids to enter the premises, and they discovered their mother.
I can't even say for sure if their father dropped them off. Like, one would assume that, but maybe they took the bus home. I really don't know. But they were entering the home by themselves, and they found their mother deceased. I think because the case is still unsolved, and the police tend to keep a lot of information to themselves in Canada when there's an unsolved case, and that's probably why we don't know a whole lot.
Yeah, we talk about that often, where they can't just give out everything they know because of false confessions or, you know, tipping somebody off that they may be on to them. So I'm sure there's more information than what we've been told.
Right. So because it's an ongoing investigation, we only know so much. Monique was deceased in the bedroom. I did find some information on the manner of death, but it was just on a blog and I couldn't corroborate it through any article. Most articles just state that the police didn't release the manner of death, but that the death was violent. And they quickly ruled it a homicide. A few hours after her body was discovered by her children, the police discovered her car, which had been abandoned. From what I could gather from Google Maps, the car was found about 20 minutes away from her house. The car keys were found nearby, seemingly just tossed aside. So the police believe the suspect or suspects had fled the scene of the crime in Monique's car, which was a golden-colored Oldsmobile Aurora.
The suspect stole the car after committing the crime.
That's what they believe, yeah, that they took the car to make their getaway. And really, this is almost all the information there is on Monique's case. That is until 2017, the police did share a little bit of extra information with the public. In an article from lapresse.ca, the police revealed that they'd actually found a black toque at the scene of the crime. But the most interesting part of that evidence is the toque did contain DNA, but the DNA didn't match any of Monique's known acquaintances. It obviously didn't match any DNA on record either.
Right. So right away, it just kind of tells us they eliminated the ex-husband or a boyfriend or somebody that was known to her.
Right. And the police do state that they don't believe her ex-husband had any role in the murder.
Yeah. So right now they've got DNA. It's just a matter of waiting until they get a hit on one of the ancestry sites or the DNA testing.
Or someone commits another crime and their DNA comes up that way. I mean, obviously you don't want more crime to happen, but that's sometimes how they solve historical cases.
It's quite disturbing that a 49-year-old, well-educated woman with two teenage kids is murdered in, 2004?
Mm-hmm.
So 17 years later, they're still waiting to find out what happened to her.
And as far as I could tell, there were no known enemies or like nefarious dealings or anything like that. Again, it might just be information that's being held back, but as far as I can tell, there's no real leads anywhere. In the 2017 article, when the police released the information about the toque that they found on the scene, they state that since so much time has passed, they're hoping that someone who's been keeping information to themselves might come forward with new evidence or a tip. But after the 2017 article, there doesn't seem to be any other progress that's been made with the case, or at least no progress that was made public.
So 4 years have gone by and no movement that they've told the public about.
Exactly. The only other bit of information I have in the case, which I'm going to share, but I don't think there's really a significance there. It was a bit of a bizarre and tragic incident that took place. So shortly after her murder, the police brought in one of Monique's friends for an interview. According to ledevoir.com, it was her friend. His name was Serge Turgeon. He wasn't a suspect. They were just basically talking to her acquaintances and friends to see if they knew anything, or just gathering general information about her. This friend is actually a pretty well-known actor in the French-Canadian world. He'd had roles in several TV shows and at the time was working with a theater company. At the time of the interview, he was 58 years old, and a few years prior, he'd already suffered a cardiovascular incident. While he was being interviewed by the police, and really within the first few minutes of his interview, he began to feel ill and he was brought to the hospital and subsequently passed away.
Wow.
Yeah, so this was reported on sort of in relation to her death, but also because he was a well-known figure. But again, I don't think there's anything nefarious that happened there. I think probably the stress and anxiety that would have been precipitated by what happened to his friend and having to talk to the police probably caused him to become ill.
Yeah, it's difficult to read too much into that. You know, he's talking to police about a friend of his having been murdered, and just that would be stress enough. We want to go out on a limb, I guess we could say, well, maybe he knew something and he was scared that it was going to have to, I guess, rat somebody out, but that's just a stretch.
Exactly. Like, I was also thinking, you know, the really unfortunate part is maybe he knew something that he wasn't aware of, like just a bit of information that may have helped the police, but we don't know that. So again, that's reported on, but I don't think it has any direct relation to what happened to her. If you have any information about Monique Gravel's death, please call the Montreal Police Department at 514-280-2222. The second unsolved murder we're going to be discussing is the murder of Florence Ann Keeble. This is another historical case. It did happen in an area that I'm quite familiar with, and it's still unsolved, despite the case being over 40 years old. There might be people out there that still know something and might now be willing to talk. Just as a heads up, I did fall down a little bit of a rabbit hole looking at this case. I might be rambling a little bit towards the end just because I kept uncovering more information. So sorry about that, but I think at least the first part of this is fairly coherent. According to an article from AtlanticCTVNews.ca, Florence was 17 years old at the time of her murder, and she was going to school in the Herring Cove area of Halifax, Nova Scotia. On October 29th, 1976, Florence didn't head home after school as expected. So this would have been a Friday. There's no further details about this to state whether or not this was out of character for her, but according to this article, the next day she attended a baby shower in Spryfield, Nova Scotia. Again, for those of you who aren't familiar with Nova Scotia, this would have been the same general area, kind of the same neighborhood.
So she's not seen after leaving school?
She doesn't go home after leaving
school. Yeah, right. So she doesn't go home, but she's at a baby shower the next day.
According to the police, after she left the baby shower, she headed to another party on Old Sambra Road. Again, kind of all the same area, just a little bit further out. She was seen leaving the party around 1:30 p.m. This article doesn't go on to state whether or not she left on her own or was accompanied. I'm also unsure of what kind of party was happening at 1:30 in the afternoon on a Saturday. So here is where things started going off the rails a little bit for me. The same article goes on to say, and this same information is available on novascotia.ca. So they go on to say that at 2:30 p.m. that same day, some hunters found her body about 350 yards off Old Sambra Road, and the police concluded that her death was a homicide.
So the last day that she was seen leaving the party, they discovered her body.
So this article and on the NovaScotia.ca website, if you're looking at unsolved homicides or cases, that's what they say. She was seen at 1:30 p.m. leaving a party, and her body was discovered at 2:30 p.m. This timeline is really, it doesn't feel right to me. I mean, as I said, what kind of party is going on a Saturday afternoon? And she's discovered like an hour after she was last seen, but there's no evidence of anything.
It seems quite sketchy.
Right. So I kept on doing a little bit of research. And the strange thing that happened as I kept looking is that I came across another article that had a completely different timeline. It's not really that it contradicts it, just as much as the timing is different. So I'll go over this second timeline with you. This article is from the Halifax Examiner, and it's written by Tim Busquet in 2016. On the article, he's discussing all kinds of unsolved homicides in Nova Scotia, but for Florence, he's specifically discussing a daily news article from 1991. So this article stated that on October 29th, Florence was supposed to attend a shower at some point after she finished school, but that instead she went to a house party with some friends. The last sighting of her would have been between midnight and 1:30 a.m., leaving a house party on Herring Cove Road. According to this article, she was alone when she left the party.
This timeline is stating It's 12 hours before the body was discovered?
Correct. So according to this article, she was alone when she left, and she was found later that day, so this is still on the Saturday, covered in leaves and brush on off Old Sambra Road, and she'd been strangled and raped. So just to kind of, I had to read everything several times to kind of make sense of it in my mind, but the first two articles are saying that she didn't go home Friday night. Saturday afternoon, or Saturday at some point, she went to a baby shower. And then Saturday afternoon, she went to a party, left at 1:30, was found dead at 2:30. The second timeline is saying that she was supposed to go to a baby shower on Friday night, instead went to a party, which she left between midnight and 1:30, and was then found dead the next afternoon, which would be Saturday afternoon. So there's, to me, there's a big discrepancy there. Like, it's a completely different story that's playing out here.
Well, it's 12 hours is it's a whole day. It's you know.
Exactly. And not to say that things can't happen in the afternoon. It's not at all what I'm trying to say. But someone disappearing or something happening to them between midnight and 1:30 versus 1:30 in the afternoon, just, I don't know. It might just be because I'm more used to hearing things like that, but that timeline seems to make more sense. But that being said, I don't know which one's correct.
But we're talking about something that happened, was it 1976? We're not talking about something that happened in 1876. So you would think that then I could see an hour, 2 hours difference in the articles, but not 12.
No, and that information has to be available in newspaper archives. Like, someone reported on this when it happened. So I think this is one of those cases where I'm covering it today, but I'm going to have to go to the library and figure out how to access archives, because I actually emailed novascotia.ca, the contact email on the website, because I feel like it's a historical case. It was over 40 years ago. It doesn't say if she has any siblings. Who knows if she even has family members left alive that are looking out at this stuff?
Yeah, it's just because 40 years have gone by, she should not be forgotten. So if there's still people around that are responsible for the crime, she should be brought to justice.
Exactly.
And the 1 hour timeline is really sketchy because, you know, you grew up out in the country and 250, 300 meters from the house, you may as well be searching 40 square miles in the backyard here. So for two hunters to stumble upon the body, not much effort was put to hide the body, or there's just something sketchy about that story.
And she left alone, so she only had an hour to, you know, run into someone for something terrible to happen. It doesn't make sense to me. I can't imagine that either it was reported on, like, almost flippantly, if it had been such a short timeline. Like, I feel like you would have had, like, cops in the woods and dogs and people scouring the area for any kind of evidence. Maybe because it's an old case, it's just not, that information is just not available. But I don't know, something just does not feel right with that first timeline.
But 1976, by the time the hunters discover the body, there's no cell phones. They need to go somewhere to make a phone call to the police. The police need to go to the scene. Just, that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. This article from the Halifax Examiner, they do talk about several suspects in the case, including a man that Florence had known who actually left the Halifax area shortly after the murder. He was actually re-interviewed in the 90s, but he stated that he had nothing to do with the case. And the police did question him because apparently there were allegations that the day after the murder, he was seen with scratches on his face, but he said he'd just gotten into a bar fight, that it was unrelated. The article goes on to say that for a while, police believe that Florence's murder might have been tied to another murder in the area. A teenager named Judy Parks had been killed not long before and in a very similar fashion, and she even resembled Florence up to a certain point. There has been speculation that a serial killer was operating in Nova Scotia for a number of years. There are a number of unsolved cases that might indicate this. So I think the police were kind of looking at their unsolved murders and trying to see if there was a pattern there, but I didn't see anything coming out of it. There's also some speculation that Clifford Olson would have been in the area at the time of these murders. And they did bring up his name as a possible suspect. I don't think they were ever able to prove definitively that he was actually in the Halifax area.
So Clifford Olson was committing his crimes in what province?
I feel like it was British Columbia.
Yeah, I think so too, but again, 1976 would be a little bit harder to trace somebody being here because we're all operating with cash, we're paying for gas with cash. There's no debit cards, there's no cell phone, there's no GPS on vehicles, so
Tracing a person would have actually had to like get into contact with people that had actually seen him. So I don't think they could actually pin him down in this area.
right. And back then, even if you were to take a plane, you bought your ticket and got on.
Yeah. So I'm not going to go into Clifford Olson on this episode because that's, and I'm going to be saying this about someone else later, but that's a whole other episode. I found an article on UPI.com about two men, so Robert Brown and James Peters, who'd been arrested for killing two women in Alberta in the 80s. But Brown, right before he was arrested, actually told the police that he'd killed seven people across Canada. And he said that this happened between 64 and 82. And the police were actually looking at him for the murder of Florence Keeble, as well as two other murders that had taken place in Nova Scotia. But again, these murders all remain unsolved. He was never charged with any of them, so I don't know if they didn't find anything. I don't know if because he was in prison, they just dropped it. I'm not sure what happened there. And he did end up committing suicide in jail.
That's I don't know how much weight a confession like that carries unless they can find direct proof. A lot of the criminals try to paint a picture of themselves being badder than what they are because they know they're going to do time. So whatever reputation follows them inside of the system may make them a little bit safer or people less tended to mess with them.
Right, or they're getting better treatment while they're confessing to all these crimes, so they just keep
Sure.
going. Yeah, so I don't know. It doesn't look to me from what I looked at that there was any proof that he committed any other crimes. Like, I don't think they found any corroborating evidence. I mean, he's named as a suspect, but I just don't know if there's really any credence to that. I am going to keep poking around. Like, I do want to try and find some archives to get the information straight on what happened, or at least what Florence's timeline would have been. It's probably time that I learn how to search newspaper archives anyway, so this is kind of going to give me a push to do so. If anyone listening knows more about this case or has newspaper clippings or anything like that, I would love to see that information, or I would love it if you could share that information with me. So let me know. I do think it's important to get the correct timeline out there. I feel like it's not one of those cases where they really don't know what happened. I think there is a clear timeline, we just don't know which one is correct. And like I said earlier, I'm just worried that there's no one left out there advocating for Florence. And I might be very wrong about that, but just because I don't know, I feel like someone needs to speak up for her.
I also think that there's likely still people in the area that were there when the crime was committed.
For sure.
Could shed some light on the timeline also.
But my neighbors might find me a little bit weird if I start asking questions about that.
Start creeping them up.
I did mention a little bit earlier about the possibility of a serial killer operating in the Halifax area, and that is something that I'm going to look into as well because I know a lot of people are talking about it online. I just don't necessarily know a whole lot of information about it myself, so I will look into it and see if it's something worth covering. Florence Keeble's case remains unsolved. There is a $150,000 reward for information that would lead to solving the case. If you have any information on this case, please contact the police at 1-888-710-9090. Anonymous tips can be sent to Crime Stoppers at 1-800-222-8477. I'm going to lose sleep over this case, and I know it. It's just really not sitting right with me.
Everybody's got, like a reporter, for example, or police officer or detective, has that one case that gnaws at them. And, somebody out there has been trying to, this has been keeping them awake at night, so.
So, we're going to be finishing up tonight with a moment of kindness. The other day, I was out for a hike at the Bluffs Wilderness Trails. If you're in Nova Scotia or if we reopen the borders and you come and visit, you should definitely check those trails out if you haven't already. It's a really beautiful spot. When I was heading back out of the trail, there's a few wooden walkways on the way out, just like the first kilometer of the trail. And while I was heading out, there were two people there fixing up some broken boards on the walkway. This was a Saturday morning, and the weather was really crappy. It was raining, it was drizzling, it was turning into snow, it was cold out. And it kind of struck me as odd that there were people working on some broken boards in the park on a Saturday in that kind of weather. So when I went home, I actually looked into who maintained that nature preserve and found that the trail is actually maintained by a group of volunteers. So there is a group, I didn't write down what their actual name was, but it's WRWEO, and they work on maintaining the trail, but it's a completely volunteer basis. And you can actually join the group with a $10 donation, which I did, which is a small donation because I'm there several times a month. But I do want to take a minute to thank those volunteers who go out there on their days off when the weather's not great to maintain something that we can all enjoy.
Yeah, it's pretty good on their part to go out there and take care of that on a crappy day on their day off. So hats off to them.
Yeah, and I hike a lot, and it is maybe not the first time, but probably the most thought I've ever put into, oh, who takes care of this trail so that I can hike on it. So I think it's something I'm going to be more mindful of moving forward. So that's all for tonight. You can find us on Facebook or Instagram at Crime and Mystery Canada, or you can write us at crimeandmysterycanada@gmail.com. Our Facebook group is private, so you can just ask to join. And we do post things like I do give a few spoilers on cases we're going to be covering moving forward if you're interested in that information. If you need an extra fix of Crime and Mystery Canada, we are on Patreon. Just look for us under Crime and Mystery Canada and we should pop up. Thanks to everyone that's been listening and have a good night.
Good night, everyone.